There's a new book out on the subject of abortion, and it couldn't be more timely. The title of the book is The Choice, The Abortion Divide in America, and the author is Danielle D'Souza Gill. Gill is spelled G-I-L-L. She's the daughter of Dinesh D'Souza, and if you've gotten to see the wonderful new movie called Trump Card, or The Trump Card by Dinesh D'Souza, you actually see a brief interview with Danielle in that movie. And in the book deals with a lot of myths surrounding the whole subject of abortion. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Danielle, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. I thought you did a great job in that little interview I saw in the movie. How old are you, if I can ask?
I'm 25.
Wow. Well, I'm so glad, and I could tell that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. What inspired you, and apparently this is your second book, but what inspired you to write a book about the subject of abortion? Was there some sort of catalyst event that made you say, oh, you know, somebody's got to set the record straight?
Well, I graduated from college, and then I moved to New York, and I saw Governor Cuomo light up the Freedom Tower pink to celebrate nine-month abortions for no medical reason. And he said that, you know, this is something the rest of the nation should follow, should emulate, and seven states allow nine-month abortion for no medical reason. So I think to me, I just saw that as, wow, you know, it's really sad that they're phrasing this as kind of women's empowerment, as progress, and all of these things. And I didn't feel like there was a book that really tore down all of the most popular pro-choice myths.
Yeah, in fact, you have several different myths, and I think it'd just be worthwhile to spend our time just going through those, you know, one at a time. The first one listed here, myth, life begins when a baby is born. Your comments.
Yeah, well, they always act like, poof, the baby's exited the womb, now it's a person. And I think when we think about that, it really makes no sense, because moments before it's born versus moments after it's born really make no difference. We're really just talking about a matter of location when it comes to that. So I think this whole argument that there's some magical point of birth really has to be debunked. And when you actually dive into that chapter, I talk about, you know, is it the fact when there's one arm outside the womb? Is it when, you know, there are three limbs outside the womb? There is really no point of birth, because it's a process, even that. And when we're talking about being able to kill this child, it actually is important to know what that means, point of birth.
Okay, and if I could just add something real quick. The New Testament uses the word brephos, B-R-E-P-H-O-S, if we were to transliterate from the Greek word directly into English, and it means baby. But that word brephos is used whether that baby is born as a baby, or, you know, is a baby, or whether that baby is in the womb, as in the example of John the Baptist and Jesus when he was in the womb of Mary. Okay, continuing. Myth. Even if it's technically a human life, the fetus doesn't feel anything or know what's happening anyway.
Yeah, they like to act like, you know, this is kind of something that they're completely unaware of. They go into the pain argument, the consciousness argument, but those are actually on our side as well. The baby in the womb actually has more consciousness, more brainwaves than a comatose person. So oftentimes we compare the baby to someone who's comatose, but this actually makes no sense, because the baby in the womb moves around. It does feel pain. It releases cortisol and the same stress hormones that we release, even in the first trimester when it's under duress, when we're trying to abort it. It tries to get away from it. So I think that to act like, you know, this entity is somehow, you know, completely like dead, basically, is what they try to make it out like, or like it's comatose, actually does not make any sense.
Wow. Okay, myth. There's a difference between a human being and a person.
Yeah, this is the kind of where they go next. Once I've established that it's a human, they'll say, okay, it's a human. Okay, it has all the DNA of the human. It has the body parts, the sex hormones. It has a gender. It's a human. Okay, fine. But it's not a person. There's something special about personhood, they say. And I think when we look at history, when we look at the Holocaust, anytime we differentiate a human from a person, that basically is used as an argument in order to torture them by acting like this human is less than the rest of us, as not a person. So I think the personhood argument really doesn't hold any weight, because actually all humans are persons.
Myth: abortion is a simple and safe procedure.
This is one that they love to say, and, well, first of all, I think we have to ask for whom, and obviously, it's not safe for the child. Abortion is one of the only, quote, healthcare procedures where it's successful if you kill the child, and if you don't succeed in killing the child, it's considered a failure, and the child then comes out as, quote, a botched abortion, as someone who may have a physical deformity because of that, because they lived through the abortion procedure. Now, if we turn to the mother, is it a simple and safe procedure? Well, that's questionable. They like to act like it's an everyday, you know, nothing. It's like removing a polyp. But in reality, your body is going to fight back against that because the woman's body is designed to protect that life and protect the fetus. And so when you're forcibly opening a cervix, when you're trying to force this child out when it's attached to placenta, it's not that safe. Now, do we have advanced medical technology that can make that happen with a suction 20 times more powerful than a vacuum cleaner? Yes, we do. But I think also people don't talk enough about the psychological ramifications and the health and well-being of the mother.
Hmm. Oh, excellent. And by the way, when you talk about babies that have survived abortions and then are actually born and then they have all these problems, there's at least 300 that we know of, people who are alive today in America who survived abortions, and more than 100 of them participated in an ad that they tried to get to show in the Super Bowl to show, you know, we are the faces of choice or something to that effect. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. they censored that advertisement. Okay, the next myth. The Constitution guarantees a right to privacy. Abortion is therefore a constitutional right.
Yeah, well, first of all, abortion is nowhere mentioned in the Constitution. Abortion is not a constitutional right. So in order for abortion to be justified, they had to go looking for the support elsewhere. So basically, they looked into right to privacy. Now, we don't actually have right to privacy. However, there is a right to protection from unreasonable search and seizure, which is, you know, the government can't look in your home or look in your car without a warrant. However, no one is searching a woman's body without a warrant. So this idea that, you know, this is right to privacy makes no sense. And I think this because you cannot kill someone even if you're in your own home. You can't kill someone even if you're in your own car. So this idea of right to privacy doesn't mean we can kill anyone wherever we want. And I think that, unfortunately, they kind of had to make this up. And many judges, including Ruth Bader Ginsburg, have talked about the fact that the support for Roe v. Wade was horrible. And the justifications they used really made no sense.
Mm, excellent. Okay, how about the myth that abortion must be taxpayer-funded?
This is what the Democrats are pushing for now. Kamala Harris and Joe Biden both are in favor of taxpayer-funded, federal-funded abortion, which basically would include the overturning of the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment is what protects people like you and me from having to pay for other people's abortions through federal funding. And I think that their argument is kind of, you know, this can't be a right unless people can access it freely. Unless it's free, it's not really a right. And so I would say, first of all, A, this is not a right. But B, even if it were a right, our other rights are not funded. The government, for example, doesn't provide us with a computer, doesn't provide us with a megaphone in order to use free speech. The government doesn't provide us with a weapon in order to use our Second Amendment. The government doesn't provide us with really any of our, quote, fundamental rights. Abortion is not a fundamental right, but even if it were, it doesn't mean the government should be paying for it.
Hmm. Yeah, it's funny. The Hyde Amendment has had a great deal of support through the years, but now, as you say, Biden and Kamala Harris, they don't want it. And Hillary before them didn't want it either. Okay, myth. Women have the freedom to choose what they want to do with their body.
Yeah, you know, this is one of the most popular ones. My body, my choice is what they say. And I would say in response to them, sure, you can choose to do whatever you want with your body. But we're talking about another human's body. It's another human's body that you're trying to mutilate. And it's another person's heartbeat you're stopping. It's another person's brain that's going to be crushed. It is not your body. And so I think this idea that it is their body shows that when they are talking about this, they actually are conflating two different bodies. And even when we look at kind of this idea of choice, quote, choice, they love to say, it's not the choice that they're really imposing on themselves, but they're imposing on another person.
Okay, here's another myth. Men do not belong in the abortion debate. I've heard that before, by the way. Years ago, I was on a talk show. It was the same. It wasn't the same episode, but was the same program that your dad had been on when Bill Maher had his program on ABC TV. It was different than when it's, you know, now it's, he has swearing and stuff. I don't even watch it. But when he was on ABC TV, it was called Politically Incorrect. And there was one episode where, you know, I was the lone conservative Christian against all the liberals, including the host, and it was all related to abortion. And somebody said, oh, you know, why do they even allow men to talk about this whole subject of abortion? And by the way, your dad always does great work on all those different talk shows, including that one. But go ahead. And that wasn't that same episode, but when he was on with Bill Maher in other episodes.
I love that. I love when there used to be actual sparring between different views, which is so lost today. But yeah, you know, do men belong in the abortion debate? I would say yes, absolutely, because it takes two to tango. It takes two to create this child. The child is its own unique entity, but it has the DNA of its mother and its father. And in addition, many men are willing to raise the child. Many fathers have their hearts broken because their child's been lost through abortion, which they had no say in. And when it comes to supporting the pro-life movement, I mean, the left loves to act like, you know, it's these angry men and that's the people that they're up against. But in reality, there are so many women who are on the front lines fighting for life and fighting for, you know, women and little girls in the womb as well. So I think that that's just kind of part of a narrative they use to really poison people and kind of turn the genders against each other.
Excellent point. All of this is, you're doing a great job. Okay, here's the next one. Myth. Abortion is necessary in order for women to fully control their own bodies.
Yeah, so this kind of goes into the whole, you know, feminist argument of women kind of need to be able to control their bodies, but also their futures. And what about their jobs? And what about all these things? You know, if women have to have kids, that kind of can, you know, create an unequal playing field and all of this. And I think that, you know, so often we're so focused on the war on women that we really forget that there's a full-fledged war on babies. And no one is saying that a woman should have to give up her career. No one is saying that. And I think that, you know, when we even look at maternity leave, the left kind of demonizes maternity leave and they demonize things like that. But that was created actually so women could, you know, receive full pay, receive, you know, the same as men, but also be able to take some time off to spend with their child. And so I think when they kind of twist all these arguments to make it out like these two are pitted against each other, it's really sad. And even when we look at President Trump, the fact that he's been in favor of something like paid family leave, you know, the left is against that. So I think the left really likes to create this dichotomy of, you know, you can't be a woman who also works. You can't be any of those things. Children are the enemy. Children are holding you back. The family's the enemy. The man is the enemy. And they basically argue that, you know, your value as a woman only comes from getting an abortion because that's the only way that you can reach to the top of your field.
Okay, we have 1 minute left. Is there any other major point that you want to make? And if not, I could leave you or have you answer this question, okay? And that is, do you think future generations will look back at us with horror? Look at all the sonograms you had. Look at all the technology you had available, and yet you had this wide-scale slaughter of the unborn.
Yes, absolutely. I think that it's very similar to slavery. Yeah. In the sense that, yep. You know, now looking back, everyone says, oh my gosh, you know, how could people have had slaves? How could people have advocated for that? How could people have said it's the lesser of two evils? How could people have said it's a positive good? And, you know, when we look back at that time, there were actually only a few abolitionists. Many of them were very strong Christians. And I think if we look at, you know, Christians and many of us today, only a few of us are fighting on the pro-life issue. But later, many are going to want to take credit for it. When everyone else says, oh, wow, you know, I'm pro-life too, it's like, well, where were you when we needed you? Where were you when the fight was going? And so I think, you know, it's really going to come down to a few fighters who choose to speak up for life.
Okay, Danielle, thank you so much. The Choice is the name of your book, and her website is Danielle, D-A-N-I-E-L-L-E, D'Souza, but there's no apostrophe there, D-S-O-U-Z-A, Gill, GILL.com. No spaces. Thank you, Danielle. God bless, and all the best with your book.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye now.